Tonight, we will attempt to speak about an apparent frustration to Lord Chaitanya's desires, apparent impediments to Lord Chaitanya's fulfilling his desires. And we'll discuss how these apparent frustrations and impediments are all part of loving affairs. We're going to talk about mistakes of love, prem vivarta, bewilderment, errors, all founded upon pure love. We'll also speak about affectionate anger, pranayarosha, Lord Chaitanya's feeling that toward some of his followers. And we'll speak about karma, dharma, varnashrama prescribed duties, and we'll also speak about bhakta dharma, the duties of a devotee in devotional service. Two years after Lord Chaitanya, he toured South India for 2 years. And we're going to deal with his attempt to go to Vrindavan, which is the epitome of an emotional quest for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But that quest is frustrated. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya, Jai Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai
Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Yes, the Lord attempts to go to Vrindavan. Why? It's actually a great mystery. Because when you think about it, Srup Damodar never went to Vrindavan. Gadadhar Pandit never went to Vrindavan. Haridas Thakur never went to Vrindavan. Pundarik Vidyanidhi, Shiki Mahiti, Ramananda Roy, these most exalted devotees never went to Vrindavan. Yet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to go. Maharaj Prataparudra, who was so determined to get the association of Lord Chaitanya, remember he threatened, if I can't get his association, I'll give up my kingdom and become a homeless person, a beggar in the street. Has Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advented to deliver all fallen souls except a king who happens to be named Prataparudra? You know how during Rathayatra he received Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Now he has heard that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to leave Puri and go to Vrindavan. He entered a very lamentative state. But being a king, he knew you just don't get emotional about these situations. You do something pragmatic. So he called Ramananda Roy and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. I have heard that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to leave. This thought is troubling me so much. please do something to impede his going. Think of something. And naturally, Ramananda Roy and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya were willing participants in the conspiracy because they were also afraid of any separation from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. These are loving dealings. Usually when someone gets in your way, just think, if you wanted to go to Vrindavan and some other devotees impeded you, they hid your passport or told the Indian consulate visa section, don't give this person a visa. How would you feel? But we're in the midst of intense dealings of such love that is beyond comprehension in this world. You'll see that again and again in this Leela. Love that is beyond comprehension on the material platform. It's amazing how proud people are in material existence. They think they know what love is. That's actually pride. In order to properly enter into Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, you have to humbly accept that what is real love is beyond your conception. Because the love that Lord Chaitanya and his associates are dealing with has nothing to do with matter, has nothing to do with time or space or material existence. It has everything to do with the innermost regions of the spiritual world. In that way, hearing Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is a most educative experience because we are being transported to the spiritual world via Lord Chaitanya and his associates. So what did Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Ramananda Roy do? They told Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya, he asked for their blessings. In this way, Mahaprabhu is showing how Vaishnavas always seek the blessings of others, no matter what they do. Traveling or writing or accepting some responsibility, they always seek the blessings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although the independent Supreme Personality of Godhead, he sought the permission of the devotees. And they strung him along, so to speak. Oh, well, it's Ratha Yatra now. And rainy season also. Okay, that was finished. Kartik is coming. You can't go during Kartik. Kartik came. Oh, now it's going to get cold. You can't go now. In this way, they successfully impeded Lord Chaitanya for 2 years. Just think, someone impeded your going to Vrindavan for 2 whole years. Finally, Lord Chaitanya gathered his intimate devotees around him and holding their hands, speaking to them that, I know that you have impeded my going. Please, I really would like to go to Vrindavan. I'm asking for your permission, your blessings. I want to take shelter of two features of Bengal, my mother and the Ganga, on my way to Vrindavan. But please grant me permission and don't impede me anymore. The devotees felt bad about their having played tricks. At the same time, trying to understand what they're up against. They're up against this feeling of impending separation, which they couldn't handle. So you could sympathize with them. We're dealing with a tsunami of love. It's more intense than anything that can be imagined in material existence. So they gave Lord Chaitanya their permission to go. Of course, they presented to him, you are the independent Supreme Personality of Godhead. You don't need our permission. But when it was time for Lord Chaitanya to depart Puri for Vrindavan, it looked like almost all Puri was vacating to go with him. Maharaj Prataparudra was informed, and he came, and Lord Chaitanya embraced him. In other words, this is the first time that Lord Chaitanya is publicly interacting with the king in terms of showering his mercy. During the Ratha Yatra, it was clandestine because Prataparudra was disguised, and Lord Chaitanya was in ecstasy, and so it could be said that Lord Chaitanya didn't externally recognize whom he was dealing with. Mahaprabhu just heard the verse Tavakatam Ritam Tapta Jivanam Kavabi Idrisam Kama Sabham Shavalamanganam Shimadhu. What is the last line? You are the most merciful. You are the great welfare worker because you're giving me this nectar, Lord Chaitanya told this unknown benefactor who was actually Prataparudra Maharaj. But now, upon Lord Chaitanya's leaving Puri for Vrindavan, he embraced Prataparudra, and Prataparudra drenched Lord Chaitanya with his tears. Have we seen such manifestations of love in this world that you drench someone's body with your tears? And Lord Chaitanya, Kaviraj Goswami says, bestowed his mercy upon Prataparudra Maharaj in three ways: with his body, with his mind, and with his words. That's what it means. That's the scientific description of pouring the mercy on someone. Body, mind, and words, he conveys mercy. Who is more magnanimous than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? When will that day be ours when we can experience that pouring on, that shower of mercy, as Lord Chaitanya gives it to us with body, mind, and words? This is the aspiration of a devotee. Then it'll be possible to understand Krishna. But in this age of Kali, without the blessings of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, it is very difficult to understand Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. That's why you see such bewilderment in India about Krishna and Krishna Leela. So many say, yes, yes, I know Krishna, I know about Krishna. But then you see they have so many misconceptions. It's because they're not going through Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're not going through Lord Nityananda. So yes, we want to get that mercy bestowed upon us through Lord Chaitanya's body, mind, and words. Not only Prataparudra got the mercy, but even the queens of his palace, they came on the backs of elephants and lined the road as Lord Chaitanya was departing. It was very auspicious. Chased ladies on elephants, lined on the road, respectfully, at a distance, at a respectful distance. But just by their seeing Lord Chaitanya from such a respectful distance, they became overwhelmed with ecstatic love, and tears of ecstatic love for Krishna filled their eyes. Just try to see this scene. So Lord Chaitanya continued to walk, and the Gadadhar Pandit problem developed. Gadadhar Pandit wanted to follow Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Bengal and who knows where else. And Lord Chaitanya told him, go back, But Gadadhar Pandit insisted to go with Lord Chaitanya. What were the two main reasons why Lord Chaitanya insisted that Gadadhar Pandit return? First of all, Gadadhar Pandit's vow of Chaitra Sannyas, to remain in the holy place with his wife without going anywhere else. And then number two, his vow of service throughout his life to the Gopinath deity. These are very solemn vows. This is not in the realm of prescribed duties, karma dharma. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya was very concerned. He pointed it out to Gadadhar Pandit. And what was the pundit's reply? Let my vow of Chaitra Sannyas go to hell. Let my vow to remain in Jagannath Puri go to hell. Wherever you are, that is Jagannath Puri. Therefore, I'll go with you. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, what about your vow of service to the Gopinath deity? Gadadhar Pandit had an answer for that also. Service to your lotus feet. That is the same as serving Gopinath, in fact. One serves Gopinath millions of times just by serving your lotus feet. That's what Lord Chaitanya explained. If you continue onward with me, who gets the blame? Lord Chaitanya says, I get the blame for your breaking your vows. The karma dharma is one thing. Varnashram dharmic prescribed duties. That's one thing. But the bhakta dharma, the spiritual duties of a bhakta, these are not to be taken lightly. Lord Chaitanya's followers would play havoc, so to speak, with the karma dharma. If there was a choice between following some varnashrama prescribed duty and serving Lord Chaitanya, they would break the karma dharma. And Lord Chaitanya appreciated that. Although Lord Chaitanya externally wanted to uphold all the dharmas, at the same time, he would respond to his devotees' love and support their loving motivations. But this is different. This is Chaitra Sannyas. Don't leave the holy dham and service to the Gopinath deity. So Lord Chaitanya is saying, I'll get the blame for your disrupting religious principles. Gadadhar Pandit had an answer for that too. This is love. It's like, was it one householder devotee? I believe it was Brahmatirtha Prabhu. He told me, you know, in my marriage, I always get the last word. Yes, dear. So similarly, in the loving affairs between Lord Chaitanya and his devotees, it was more exalted than any love we can imagine. So Gadadhar Pandit's getting the last word now. Don't worry, he told Mahaprabhu, you won't get the blame. You see, what's going to happen is you're going to proceed from Puri to Bengal, to Navadvip, and I'll happen to be going in the same direction, you see? But we're not going together. So there's no need for you to feel that you'll get the blame. You just do your thing, in other words, I do mine. And it just so happens that together, we're proceeding toward the same place. But that's just coincidental. So, yeah, you go ahead and I'll go ahead and what happens, happens. It's not your fault. Nothing depends upon you. You don't get the blame. So Lord Chaitanya kept walking, and Gadadhar Pandit kept walking, near to him, both going separately to the same place. And finally, Lord Chaitanya relented and called Gadadhara Pandit to his side, and they traveled together for a while. But then Lord Chaitanya began to feel affectionate anger, pranaya rusha. Actually, you see, internally he was satisfied by Gadadhara Pandit wanting to be with him at any cost. But externally, Lord Chaitanya felt that Bhakta Dharma should be upheld. And so Lord Chaitanya externally expressed anger. Look, you've gone too far already. You've broken your vows. It's very serious. No more. I order you, go back. And upon saying that, Lord Chaitanya got into a boat that crossed the river. And what did Gadadhara Pandit do? This is how intense the love is. Gadadhara Pandit collapsed on the ground unconscious. Lord Chaitanya left him with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya picked him up off the ground and explained the facts to him. This is the way the Leela goes. Instead of, this is the way the cookie crumbles. Or that's the way it is. No. On this highest level of personal interaction, the explanation was, that's the way of the Leela. So Lord Chaitanya moves on. And he has Ramananda Roy with him. Now remember, if you've ever felt that you've loved someone in this world or experienced love, has it happened that when that person departs, have you ever fallen on the ground unconscious? We don't experience such intensity of love on the material platform. Husband, wife, mother, father, child. Of course, maybe when someone leaves their body, we lament extraordinarily. But just someone going away on a journey and they're going to come back, you collapse on the floor unconscious. But this is the pure love that Lord Chaitanya's associates are feeling. So now it's Ramananda Roy's turn. Lord Chaitanya tells him, all right, you've come far enough. Now you can also go back. And Ramananda Roy collapses on the ground unconscious. And then the scene gets even more intense. Lord Chaitanya picks up Ramananda Roy on his lap and begins to cry. And then he leaves Ramananda Roy and proceeds further on the journey, heavy-hearted. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is how attached Lord Chaitanya is to his devotees. If we can just get a drop of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, just get a little attention from him, just a glance from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, our life is successful. We can't calculate what the affection of Lord Chaitanya can be like. We may be thinking that we're nothing compared to Ramananda Roy or Gadadhara Pandit, but still, even an insignificant devotee who has sacrificed in some small way for Lord Chaitanya, you can't calculate what the response from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. I remember someone was telling me, I read it somewhere, how there was a devotee from the Bay Area who had, in the early days of Prabhupada's campaign in India, he had gone to India during the tough times in Mumbai, the Juhu property affair. And then he came back to the West, and devotees didn't know where he was or how he's doing. Or evidently, he seemed to drift a bit. So Prabhupada asked the devotees about him. And the devotees replied, he's a little, we haven't seen him. He seems to have gone off a bit. But Prabhupada said, he is a pure devotee. And Prabhupada remembered his sacrifice during very extreme times. That we don't know. We can't figure out externally with our puny calculations who deserves what reciprocation. Seeing the heart of bhakti that requires a pure spiritual vision. To see how Krishna's reciprocating and why. That's not an ordinary vision. Just like about the Sankirtan movement, Prabhupada explained that it gives even a so-called ordinary devotee a chance to be a hero, just like during a war. An ordinary farm boy can go off to the front lines and win a medal and be honored in so many ways. So similarly, the Sankirtan movement gives every devotee, and we all think we're insignificant devotees, gives every devotee a chance to get Lord Chaitanya's attention. That is the most valuable commodity in Kali Yuga, to get the glance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we can't calculate the value of that glance. Even we can try our best for Lord Chaitanya and materially fail. Still, your effort can capture Lord Chaitanya's attention. You don't have to be materially successful. Mahaprabhu is looking at the sacrifice his devotees make. We have this conception that only when there is some obvious success as materially known. Not that we have anything against such successes in devotional service, but there's a natural tendency to think that unless we're getting big results, we can't get Lord Chaitanya's attention. But Lord Chaitanya's vision and how devotees please him, this is very mystical. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, we get to see the heart of reciprocation between Lord Chaitanya and his devotees. Oh, Ramananda Roy. And Lord Chaitanya departed. An amazing thing happened. On his way, on his further along the way, Lord Chaitanya was told by the government assistants of Prataparudra traveling with him to make sure that there were no obstacles. He was told that they're now about to enter the territory of a ferocious Muslim king who ruled that area. And the king was a debauch, a drunkard, so on and so forth. And it was precarious. So the government advisor with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, we should negotiate passage through his land because it could be quite difficult. Meanwhile, that Muslim king had sent a spy into Lord Chaitanya's entourage to check out what was going on. And the spy went back to report to the Muslim king. Amazing person, surrounded by thousands of persons who are always chanting, dancing, rolling on the ground in ecstasy, absorbed in like mad persons. And they're always saying, Krishna, Krishna. And then the Muslim spy began to chant, Krishna, 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 Krishna. And he became overwhelmed with ecstasy. So hearing that, the king's heart changed. See, this is how Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement spreads. One heart, one transformed heart touches another transformed heart. So the king's heart began to change, although he's a drunkard. And he sends a messenger to Lord Chaitanya's party that he would like to meet Lord Chaitanya. And so the messenger interacts with Lord Chaitanya's government advisors, who were very diplomatic and shrewd while being polite and merciful. The Muslim king sent a message, I want simply peace, I just want darshan of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Lord Chaitanya's government backers. This way you can see that the real job of a government is to back the saintly persons and give them all facility. So the government backers of Lord Chaitanya told the messenger of the Muslim king, all right, you can come. You can just bring 5 or 6 persons with you, and no one should have any weapons. See, all the elements of a real society are there. You have the Kshatriyas. They know how to negotiate, administrate for Lord Chaitanya's protection. Just 5 or 6 can come with you, no weapons. The Muslim king heard that, and he prepared for his darshan with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. First of all, he dressed as a Hindu, which for a Muslim king is quite extraordinary. And then he approached Lord Chaitanya, and from afar he offered his obeisances. And from afar he became surcharged with bhakti shakti. From afar, just by seeing Lord Chaitanya from a distance and offering obeisances, he became absorbed in ecstatic love. And then he came before Lord Chaitanya and made his presentation. Why was I born in a Muslim family? Why was I absorbed in such a low-class culture? If I had been born in a Hindu family, I could more easily associate with you. Therefore, what's the use of this body? Let my body die immediately. Once again, what kind of love is going on here? Even from such a Muslim king who was a drunkard, now he's saying, let my body die immediately because it's preventing me from getting all the association with you that I want. Have you ever said that to someone? I can't be with you enough. Let my body drop immediately dead. But and then the Muslim king, upon chanting the name Krishna, Krishna in ecstasy, he asked, is there any particular service I can do? It's very important, because chanting of Hare Krishna means, please engage me in your service, my Lord. That we chant with attention is shown through our eagerness for devotional service. It's like whenever we come here, we see such eagerness. That's the result of proper chanting of Hare Krishna. Where is the service? What is the service to be done now? The eagerness gets to be so intense that I think that you might do a protest demonstration at Vaisheshika Prabhu's door. We're not having enough service. Give us more. Give us more. picket signs in front of the house. We're not getting enough. Yes, have you thought of doing that? That kind of eagerness comes from attentive chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. That shows that the attentive chanting has been going on. So the Muslim king expressed that. What service would you like me to do? Showing that he was not a pretender in his chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Just saying the holy name of the Lord a few times in purity had filled him with such genuine devotional ecstasy. And then he begged forgiveness. Another important point for a Vaishnav. First, eagerness for service, showing that you've actually heard the Hare Krishna mantra. And then expressing regret for past sinful activities performed. The Muslim king felt ashamed to the core of his heart. I've been involved in offending brahmanas, offending Vaishnavas, and killing cows. He begged for forgiveness from the depths of his heart. And of course, real regret is necessary in bhakti. This point is made especially in the sixth canto about Ajamil, where Srila Prabhupada explains regret is a necessary emotional ingredient in bhakti. And real, genuine regret means you don't make that mistake again. You don't commit that sin again. So the Muslim king expressed his deepest, most sincere regret. He had asked for service, so Lord Chaitanya's government backers pointed out that, you know, we need to get through your territory, and your territory has rivers infested with pirates. Can you arrange for a military escort, nice boat? So the Muslim king did all that. He personally escorted Lord Chaitanya on a very first-class boat, protected in a military convoy. Then what happens? Lord Chaitanya is going to move on. And now it's time for separation from the former drunkard Muslim king. What happens next? Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, the pain of separation that the Muslim former drunkard king felt upon Lord Chaitanya's leaving him, Kaviraj says he can't describe it. This is what's going on in Chaitanya. Remember the separation that hit Ramananda Roy. Kaviraj Goswami says that separation, those feelings of separation, were too painful for him to describe. Now, we're not just talking about Ramananda Roy, we're talking about a former drunkard Muslim king. And Kaviraj Goswami says, the feelings of separation the king felt are impossible to describe. But just see what is the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ramananda Roy, okay, everyone can understand. He's from the spiritual world, intimate associate of Krishna. But a former drunkard Muslim king, cow killer, harasser of brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and now, upon Lord Chaitanya's leaving, the king feels such ecstasy of separation. And that ecstasy is painful. That Kaviraj Goswami says, I can't describe it. What is going on here? What is going on? Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. What is going on with Lord Chaitanya and his associates? That such transmission of pure love, reciprocal pure love, is happening to such an intensity that we can't imagine. So Lord Chaitanya goes further. But as you know, he never made it to Vrindavan. There were so many crowds when he got to Navadvip, and he got to Ramkeli, Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and Sanatan Goswami advised him, it's not good to go to Vrindavan. surrounded by thousands of people. So Lord Chaitanya turned back to go to Jagannath Puri. And you can imagine the feelings of the devotees hearing that Lord Chaitanya is returning. Lord Chaitanya greeted the devotees and explained what happened. How thousands of, an entourage of thousands was accompanying him everywhere in Bengal. And how Sanatana Goswami advised him, it's not the way to go. And Lord Chaitanya even said, at first I thought, what is this advice? Don't go to Vrindavan. I don't care for it. But then he thought more about it, as Mahaprabhu presents himself, and decided to adhere to it. Yes, it's true. It's true. I won't go. I'll go back to Puri. So Lord Chaitanya gave those reasons for his turning back. But there actually was a deeper reason. And he looked at Gadadhar Pandit and said, because Gadadhar Pandit wouldn't let me go, I had to return. And Gadadhar Pandit was so overwhelmed to hear this. This is relationship. But still, Gadadhar Pandit had to point out the absolute truth. He said, actually, there's no need for you to go to Vrindavan. Wherever you are, that is Vrindavan. Remember during the Rath Yatra, Lord Chaitanya's mind is Vrindavan. Moramana Vrindavana. His mind is Vrindavan because in his mind, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna are constantly going on. So Gadadhar Pandit made that point. It's actually no need for you to go to Vrindavan because your mind is Vrindavan. Particularly the heart of Lord Chaitanya contains the emotions of Srimati Radharani. And Lord Chaitanya is always trying to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. Still, Gadadhar Pandit pointed out, to set the example for ordinary people, to show them they should try to go to Vrindavan, you're trying to go to Vrindavan, even though your mind is Vrindavan. So again, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada makes the point that often materialistic persons want to congregate in Vrindavan and then present themselves as highly advanced. In spite of their bad behavior, they're going to present themselves as highly advanced because they're living in Vrindavan. They don't leave Vrindavan. So just to introduce the reality of humility, Srila Prabhupada points out the long list that we said in the beginning of most exalted devotees who never went to Vrindavan. Gadadhar Pandit, Ramananda Roy, Haridas Thakur, Shiki Mahiti, Pundarik Vijayanidhi, a long list. So then Lord Chaitanya fulfilled the desire of Gadadhar Pandit to have Gadadhar Pandit cook lunch for him, invite him to lunch. And we get to another reciprocation that is indescribable. The affection by which Gadadhar Pandit prepared lunch and served lunch for Lord Chaitanya, and the affection by which Lord Chaitanya ate that lunch. Kaviraj Goswami says, this affection cannot be described. So once again, just see, we think we know what love is, we think we know what affection is, but actually, to appreciate the affection and loving exchanges, the affection and loving exchanges in Chaitanya Leela, this requires the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And this mercy is our lifelong quest. Then it will be easier for us to understand Radha and Krishna. Otherwise, understanding Radha and Krishna is difficult. And that's why you see so much misunderstanding. But if you try to approach Radha and Krishna through Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, your efforts can be successful. By becoming the humble servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu, your efforts to understand Radha and Krishna can be successful. So these intricacies in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, in which his devotees apparently impede him, obstruct him, these are all loving dealings. These are they're mistakes. Well, on one level, they shouldn't do like that. But these devotees are impelled by pure love. So this is called prema vivarta, bewilderment, or mistakes made because of love. So you see, bhakti on its highest levels is not hackneyed, or it's not like a formula. These devotees, there's pure bhakti impelling their hearts, and therefore sometimes they don't follow the prescribed Varnashram Dharma behavior. And Lord Chaitanya, externally, though showing dissatisfaction, internally appreciates, because prema is the highest reality, the highest motivating factor, the highest integrity, more than prescribed duties. Still, Lord Chaitanya always has his eye on the proper execution of bhakti. And so that is why he reacted in such a way to Gadadhar pundits wanting to give up his two vows of Chaitra Sannyas and service to the Gopinath Didi. These weren't prescribed duties. These were this is Bhakta Dharma, the essential activities of a devotee. Even then, though, Lord Chaitanya was externally angry but inwardly pleased. So it's a complex situation. Especially when you're dealing with the affectionate anger of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Pranaya Rosha. How can you be affectionately angry? Either you're angry or you're affectionate. Of course, sometimes parents, they try to be affectionately angry with their children. But, you know, here's the problem. In the material world, affection is always mixed with tinges of rajagun and tamagun. Like it or not, it's always there. We just try our best, but it's always there. So it's hard sometimes for a child or whomever you're trying to be affectionately angry toward, it's hard for them to feel the affection more than the anger. But in Chaitanya Lila, this Pranaya Rosha, this affectionate anger, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is what it is. It's not a material phenomenon, obviously. Lord Chaitanya is angry. At the same time, he is affectionate. And these feelings are coming, are purely on the pure spiritual platform. And his followers on the pure spiritual platform. So this shows you how intense things get in bhakti. I bring this up because one fear we have is, if I become too advanced in Krishna consciousness, where will be the absorbing experiences? You see, the conditioned soul craves absorption. That's the motivating factor behind material affairs, like, for example, in sports, whether it's a baseball game or the World Cup or something, or cricket, you want to be absorbed in the agony, the ecstasy. Oh, yeah! Right? Your heart is craving absorption. It's the same thing with relationships, whether they're romance affairs or parent-child. Parents have children, generally, when it's voluntary, because they want to feel some absorbing, loving exchange. That's the hope that people have in entering into romantic relationships. Oh, this will be the absorption that my heart is longing for. when we hear Lord Chaitanya's dealings with his associates, we see absorption that is beyond our conception. And as we read Chaitanya Charitamrita over and over again, this absorption begins to attract us, and we long for nothing else. And in this way, you lose your attraction for so-called absorbing experiences in the material world. The one thing that everyone says, for example, about the Sankirtan activities of distributing Krishna consciousness, distributing the holy name, is it's the most absorbing thing I ever did in my life. And that's why devotees relish this service so much. Book distribution, Harinam, reaching out to others, touching their hearts with bhakti. It's so absorbing. You can't get it out of your mind. In fact, even you may think you're not very successful at such services, but still, the taste, it's like good chutney. Too hot to handle, but too sweet to resist. This is the absorption that we're looking for. And if we can understand in our hearts how much we crave absorption, we can really understand a big chunk of our psychology, our operating dynamics, our motivational dynamics. Absorption. You want to feel absorbed and feel the intensities. Yes. This is it. Something's happening. My heart is resonating, vibrating. My intelligence is pulsating. That's what Krishna's service does to you. So one can feel like that just at the outer precincts of genuine absorption in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. And naturally, we crave the association of those who can heighten that absorption. But let us remember, we want that absorption. We don't want to be absorbed in Trigunamayi, which chews you up and spits you out. We don't want that kind of absorption. But material existence is all about seeking absorption in Trigunamayi for satisfaction. Isn't that a terrifying thought? That you look toward material activities for fulfillment and satisfaction? The obvious example, it's like looking to a desert for water. Of course, in Australia, they are working hard to get water out of the desert. Australia is the world's biggest inhabited desert-like continent. So they're busy building desalination plants that will use huge amounts of energy to transform salt water into drinking water. So much energy is required. So this is what we're trying to do in material life. We're making our life's version of a desalination plant. There's no fresh drinking water, so to speak, in material existence. So with our scientific prowess, with our industrious labors, we're going to build for our life, metaphorically speaking, we're going to make a desalination plant, and that'll solve all the problems. And we have to work so hard for all that. For material absorption, we have to work so hard. It's humiliating. Was it Raghunath Das praise that I'm working so hard, I'm slaving so hard as a servant of my senses, and even though I'm working so hard and so faithfully, my senses never give me a vacation. Usually, you know, you work hard, you expect some vacation time. Statistically, Americans work much harder than Europeans, for example. They work on an average of 3 more weeks a year than Europeans. So Naturally, you work hard. You expect at least a couple of weeks vacation. it's coming. It's coming. Vacation time. But Raghunath Das Goswami points out, you serve your senses. They're such merciless taskmasters. You serve them so dedicatedly, and they never award you a vacation. No relief. This is the tragedy of serving the senses. All because we want absorption. So Lord Chaitanya's Leela, his Sankirtan movement, transforms the absorption we're seeking. Our quest changes. And we get just a glance from Lord Chaitanya through Lord Chaitanya's devotees, through the deity of Lord Chaitanya, through hearing about Lord Chaitanya, through reading about Lord Chaitanya. And we begin to perceive the real dimension of absorption. And therefore, our life changes in the most substantial way. So please remember these very intense dealings between Lord Chaitanya and his devotees, the affectionate anger, the bewilderment, the mistakes done because of bewilderment of pure love. Lord Chaitanya's desire that devotees follow their devotional activities properly. Even Lord Chaitanya wanted to follow the karma dharma properly. He wanted to be a strict sannyasi. And his followers would always try to impede that. They didn't want him sleeping on the floor. They didn't want him practicing austerities. But Lord Chaitanya was determined, I'm going to do it because I want to set the example of how to be a firm sannyasi. But this caused pain to his followers. And then Lord Chaitanya became affected by their pain. So all these things are going on. The platform of pure love. All right, we'll stop here. And if we're fortunate, we'll hear some comments from our senior Vaishnavas here.
We welcome His Holiness Devamrita Swami to ISV. Please, Hare Krishna. Marge, what are the first signs of this kind of absorption in bhakti? When someone's coming from being absorbed in materialistic life and thought, what are the first signs that one's transferring that absorption to bhakti, and how does it occur?
You get a chance to do selfless service, and you realize this is so satisfying. You get your first drops on your tongue of selfless service, the taste, and you become intrigued by it. Just like, for example, just think, because ISV is famous for its book distribution efforts. You think about it. You're going out, you're selling books, knocking on people's doors, or you're on putting in motels, and you're distributing on the streets. And is this, how can this be some kind of exalted activity? This is selling, and there's so many people distributing flyers and newspapers, and here you are. Educated, cultured people, and yet you're doing like this. But what you're tasting is the selfless service to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the first installment of the mercy is it intrigues you. Ooh, this is very interesting. Right? There's something special about this. I can't figure it out. You try, but you know, I'm very intelligent. I'm an IT person, or I'm an engineer, but I can't figure this out. Why I'm becoming so attracted to this activity? I'm a sophisticated person. I have my own home, or I have heaps of school loans, or sophistication. Why is it that I'm so intrigued by this these activities of selfless devotional service? So first there's intrigue. You get a little taste, a little appetizer. And then, because of proper association, you become more motivated. Let me go further. Let me go further. So the proper association is necessary to bring you from the stage of being intrigued and fascinated to deeper immersion. And as you become more deeply immersed, you become a beggar. You abandon your pride and just beg Lord Chaitanya, give me a chance to please you, please. As sophisticated as we think we are, as the taste of selfless service to Lord Chaitanya descends, we become beggars, happy beggars. We become so happy just begging Lord Chaitanya, give me a chance to assist you. Then Lord Chaitanya will fulfill that request. He'll fulfill what we're begging for. He'll give us a chance to assist him. But in the process of doing so, there sometimes are austerities, things we have to tolerate, perseverance. And we don't want to take back our request. Oh, why did I ask for this? No. Again, good association is necessary. So that we won't think, we won't want to give back the jewel we've gotten or take it lightly. I always tell the story how I began my career of trying to distribute Prabhupada's books. Devotees like Vaisheshika Prabhu and Keshava Bharati Maharaj, they were my heroes. Still, my emulation of them was not producing any results. I would try and try and go day, all day and even into the night, trying to distribute Prabhupada's books, even 7 days a week, just nothing would work. The top Sankirtan devotees, they would come to New York and train up the devotees, and I would go out with the best, and they would try to show me what to do, but I wouldn't catch fire. I remember a funny thing. I thought I was in agony. And indeed, it certainly felt like agony. I just couldn't get it together. I couldn't achieve. I couldn't be a successful book distributor as I conceived of it. But then, years later, maybe 20 years later, I was talking to one of my godbrothers who was also with me at that time. It was actually Naranta Prabhu in L.A. And I was saying, you remember how excruciating ordeals I went through, going out all day and practically distributing nothing. Oh, do you remember? He said, yeah, I remember. You look so blissful. I said, what? I said, what? He said, yeah, everyone always talked about how blissful you look. I said, yeah. So it shows you, we don't really know ourselves in devotional service. You know, I thought I was suffering so much, and everyone else was thinking, why does he look so blissful? we think we really have self-knowledge, you know? We're quite puffed up. I remember a few years ago, I had to wrestle with some big, a puzzling situation in Krishna consciousness. Solve a very difficult situation. And it was just totally preoccupying my mind, and I was just, you know, sometimes these chapters happen in a devotee's life where perplexing situation, you're begging for Krishna's guidance and the situation's pressing down on your shoulders. So I was feeling like that, like I was feeling the burden. And I walked into a shop. I had to get something. You know, and I, you know, absorbed in this burden, you know, I was carrying around on my, you know, trying to think what is best for Krishna, what to do. Oh, Krishna, what to do? This option, that option, I don't know. And I thought I was just, I was just carrying a burden in Krishna's service, but still a burden, you know, anxiety for Krishna. And I walked into the shop and walked up to the counter, and the lady said to me, "You look so happy. What are you doing? Going on vacation or something?" I said, "Wow, what is this bhakti?" You know. So the feelings of a devotee, they're very special. Even the feelings in which we're trying to serve Krishna and we feel unsuccessful, those are very special feelings. Of course, I had at that time as a young devotee, I had a neophyte conception of what success was, because later it turned out, in spite of my foolishness, so many persons I met on Sankirtan became devotees. Rama Bhadra, temple president in New York, Archita in L.A., about five or six others. But I wasn't seeing things in that way. I was focused on perhaps my conceptions of how Krishna should use me. Of course, my conceptions to be a successful book distributor, there's nothing wrong with those aspirations. I remember in 1975, early, I had a 5-year program worked out. Okay, right now I'm just a tiny Sankirtan devotee, but in 5 years I've got a plan. I'll be up there with Vaisheshika Prabhu and Keshava Bharani Maharaj and all that. I had a 5-year, yeah, I really had it worked out, 5 years. And then after, I do that for the rest of my life, then back to Godhead. And it all worked out, you know. So what happened was I went out every day for 7 days. I think I explained a couple of years ago here. For 2 years straight and did nothing. I mean, really, practically nothing. So then one Christmas marathon, after 2 years of doing nothing, I was out with Bhrigupati. He still remembers this to this day, Bhrigupati Prabhu. And we pulled up in a car at a shopping center at a mall, and I said, "All right, I think I'm going to do just like the big guns do. I'm going to do like Vaisheshika Prabhu and all the other big Sangha devotees. They just open the trunk of the car, and they're loading up their book bags. And as people walk by, they just stop, you know, as they're filling up their bags in there. So, okay, you know, I'm going to imitate the big boys." So I did that. I threw open the trunk, and I was loading my book bag. Someone came by, just reached for a big hardcover Krishna book, handed to the person. They took the book. Wow, what is this? I was generally known to be just a magazine distributor, just a magazine distributor, and Krishna Reservoir of Pleasure, and Yeah, you know, some small books. Nothing wrong with those, but that's how we distinguish ourselves, differentiate ourselves as distributors. Then, what's the size of the book you can distribute? Of course, you have a much more holistic and psychologically healthy version of Sankirtan here. And but you know, we were, the movement was very young then. You know, Prabhupada was the only adult. You remember those days, right? So, you know, I was known as a, you know, small book magazine distributor like that. But so, for, wow, someone took a you know, hardcover Krishna book. Wow. And then I did it again to the next person. The next person took. And then the next person. The next person. And 10 persons in a row. And then Bhrigupati Prabhu, he was watching from across the parking lot. He came running up. What's going on? What's happening? Do you have some new mantra you haven't told us? what are you doing? What are you doing? I said, I don't know, but all I can tell you is after 2 years of every day doing nothing, and now this is happening, I know it's not me. There's no way I can think this is me. So I just went on like that for the rest of the day. And I remember I came back to the New York temple. Ramapad Maharaj, he was a brahmachari then. He was a Sankirtan leader. And you had your names on the board and you put your score down. And I walked into the Sankirtan office. He knew better than to look up. He knew, you know, his confession. 10 magazines, you know, 3 Beyond Births and Deaths. Meanwhile, you see the names of the all-stars, you know, 40 Bhagavatams, you know, like that. So then I just wrote down my score, and I was about to walk out the door. He just kind of looked up at the... 50 Krishna books? What happened to you? So from that day on, it's like just Krishna turned on the switch, said, all right, enough of your nonsense. I'm taking over. So then that's when I made my plan. Okay, it's the 5-year program. In 5 years, I'll catch the big guns. So I just, after that, I just floated out the door on book distribution every day in ecstasy. I just, oh, I was, at last I've achieved the rarest jewel. But then Krishna had another plan. So after 3 months, I started getting sick. And it was right about the time when Prabhupada started his Chaitanya Charitamrita Mission Impossible Marathon. So I had to give up the service due to health, and I went to L.A. to work on Prabhupada's books. So, Krishna's dealings with his devotees who try to please him as servants of Lord Chaitanya, they're very mysterious, and the greatest adventure in life. Tell other stories. After Prabhupada's disappearance, I knew that the BBT wasn't going to be running at the same intense, super-absorbing marathon pace to keep up with Prabhupada. When chapter 13 of the 10th canto, the last chapter Prabhupada did, arrived on my desk in L.A., I just read it, and for some reason, just by reading it, I knew this is the last chapter. So I just cried reading the chapter. And it was the end of the most extraordinary period in human history, recent human history. So then I had heard that to get the special dust of Prabhupada's lotus feet, he said, anyone who goes and preaches in the communist countries, they get that special dust. I said, okay, this is what I got to do. I didn't have the health to go to go on airport or street Sankirtan, so I thought I'll go sacrifice in this way. So I Prabhupada said if his books are distributed in these communist countries, communism is finished. There'll be no war between America and Russia. I was just talking to a god brother this morning who was trying to compartmentalize Srila Prabhupada. Said, well, Prabhupada said there'd be a war between Russia and America. It never happened. So that shows you that his statements about such things are not the same as when he's quoting Shastra. We have to discriminate and distinguish. So I said, well, without getting so deeply into your logic, if you're going to quote Prabhupada saying one thing, you should quote the other thing. He said, if his books are distributed behind the Iron Curtain, then communism is finished and there'll be no war. So let's just get the full picture here. So anyway, I remember devotees just trying to, the elaborate lengths we went through just to smuggle in like five easy journeys to other planets into these communist countries. Wrap them in aluminum foil and put them in the engine. So when some, if someone would look at the engine, they'd see the aluminum foil and they think it's part of the engine. And so many things we did just to get five little books into a country. For year after year, that was what we tried to do. At most, I remember once, my godbrother Krishna Shetra and I smuggling books into East Germany and dropping off of, it's hard to explain because you can't visualize it, but anyway, going to West Berlin, you'd have to pass through East Germany, and it was a heavily fortified route because the East German police knew that all sorts of funny business would be going on. So you'd have to pretend we got lost and we wound up deep in East Germany and didn't realize it. And then the idea was to drop off boxes of books so the few devotees in that country, which is now known by historians as the most repressive police regime ever in human history. In terms of the efficiency of the repression and surveillance, every fifth person worked for the government as an agent, one way or another, even just a neighborhood agent, every fifth person. So just to get a few books, such an endeavor. Year after year it went on like this. We felt so happy. We got five books into Romania. Wow, how great is that? Five books into Romania. It was like the greatest achievement. But that's how meager the results were materially. And then to find devotees in such places. I remember we were in Poland in like 1978. And this is how you try to find a devotee. We got a report that someone, you know, a six-hour drive away in a remote corner of Poland, someone had been reported with a Lord Shiva t-shirt. You know, that's, someone was wearing a Lord Shiva t-shirt. So we immediately jump in the car and drive 6 hours to this town to find who is wearing a Shiva t-shirt. He could be the one. He could be the bhakta who transforms the whole country. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack. And of course, you get to the town and you find out the person just left for another town. No one knows where he moved, or the person is just, you know, not very serious at all. But you just had to try every lead. This is how desperate we were. Someone 6 hours away was his friends say he wears a Lord Shiva t-shirt. Let's go. So this is how desperate we were. And meanwhile, just getting pounded by the police at every step. Oh, it was just harrowing. And then I remember I was sitting before Gornatai deities at our hideout. The place still exists in Poland now. This our hideout farm called Novi Shantipur. It's a hideout in the mountains. And I was looking at the deities. Oh, for 6 years, just nothing. Risking life and limb and just no results. It just seems impossible. And then suddenly sitting in front of the Gornatides, I got this inspiration, just this totally, fantastic, improbable plan how to distribute thousands of books in the country. And the idea was just totally incredulous. The way it came to me was incredulous. But anyway, nothing to lose. Let's try it. It involved bribing the government. It involved various complex maneuvers. The first time we tried to execute the plan, it seemed like it was going to work. It didn't work. But I just kept thinking, Gornatai has inspired this plan. Something's going to give somewhere. The dam is going to break somehow. The plan involved. Now remember, for 6 years, just smuggling in 5 books? Wow, what a great achievement. This plan involved sending a tractor trailer of 10,000 Bhagavad Gitas from the printer in Germany straight into the Iron Curtain. By doing all sorts of subterfuges and bribes. And just after 6 years of trying to do something, Krishna was giving some intelligence in the most crafty way. And the second time it worked. A tractor trailer of 10,000 hardcover Bhagavad Gitas drove from the printer in Germany straight into the Iron Curtain. And oh, the reaction of the devotees when those books arrived, you can't imagine. They were practically covering the floor with tears. They just couldn't believe it. 10,000 hardcover deluxe Bhagavad Gitas. And the books arrived in the middle of the winter, which meant, 0 degrees. Yeah, snow and all that, and, 0 degrees Fahrenheit. And these devotees would take these books out to distribute them, and they were so happy they were crying and the tears were freezing to their cheeks. And people were paying 1 month's salary for a Bhagavad Gita. They were so desperate for something else. 1 month's salary, easily. So these are miracles of Lord Chaitanya. And just when we think our efforts are so meager and what's the point of it all, we don't know how Lord Chaitanya is going to take our efforts and make something out of our efforts. So these are the miracles of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. And the more experiences like this that we accumulate, we get a whole memory lane. And that's the real wealth that stays with us all our life. These experiences of being absorbed in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement and having these wonderful things happen. I remember the first time I saw Keshava Bharti Maharaj. It was in Washington, D.C. in 73. And he was a householder then. And I came into the temple room, and there was this devotee sitting on the floor, cross-legged, very straight back, very seriously chanting japa. I said, wow, what is this? He's really focused. He's really fixed. So devotee inspiration is so important in our devotional service, and it takes our service to a higher level. So anyway, I hope I touched in some way upon your question.
I have another one. If I might. Yes, it did. Thank you. My other question is about what is the sign of health in a community, a devotional community, and how, what are the best ways to develop a healthy community that will be sustainable and that fosters the right kind of environment so that everyone can make advancement?
Again, selfless service is the jewel that everyone's pursuing according to their current capacity or motivation. They know what that jewel is, and they're trying to pursue it. And in order to pursue that, they're getting guidance. Bhakti without guidance is actually inappropriate. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna clearly says that bhakti requires guidance. Tadvidhi pranipatena. If you want to know the truth about all the different sacrifices, Krishna says, that he's explained in the fourth chapter of the Gita, you need to get guidance. Arjuna was bewildered until he got guidance. Arjuna is showing you. You know, doing bhakti in the material world can be intricate. Things happen. Complications happen. So guidance is required. So I would say a healthy community is one that has ready access to guidance. And then ready opportunity for selfless service. If those two things are there, you're definitely marching toward the ultimate freedom of a dedicated life for satisfying Krishna's senses. Opportunities for selfless service and constant guidance at every step of the way. A community that's a network of guidance and care, all for the purpose of satisfying Krishna's senses. Naturally, we want to be concerned with each other, but it's not that we're just kind of showing concern in kind of a new agey way. How you feeling, huh? I mean, really, tell me, how do you feel? Then you give a big hug, you know. No, the kind of care and concern we're talking about is always focused on the goal of satisfying Krishna. How are you feeling? Meaning, how are you feeling in relation to Krishna? Because what is something if it's not in relation to Krishna directly? How are you feeling in relation to Krishna's service? So a community that has that goal firmly in mind, care, guidance, sustenance for the purpose of satisfying Krishna's service, that community feels surcharged. And this way, your ISV community can set an example for the whole world. You're working with what you have here. Yeah, that was Prabhupada's genius. He worked with what Krishna sent him. And Krishna sends more.
And Maharaj, that was a wonderful class. And it's continuing with the answers to these wonderful questions. Perfect question, perfect answers. That last point that you made rang my bell. And I was thinking of one pastime in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita that I might share at this moment. When Narada Muni was searching for the devotee who had received the most mercy from Krishna, and the plot, of course, you know, he would go to one devotee and praise that devotee, and the devotee would refute the praise. And as the devotee got more elevated, the praise got more subtle, and the refutations, therefore, had to get more subtle. So it's quite deep, you know, exposition of how, you know, devotees felt about one another. And at one point, he came to the Pandavas, and the Pandavas refuted his praise by saying, how can we be the most intimate devotees or special devotees? Because where's Krishna now? He just came, he won this war, and then he ran off. And he's in Dwarka with the Yadus, and they're his family. So that they're the most special. They're the ones that got this. So you should go there. So Narada Muni said, yes. So he went running to the Dwarka. And as he was approaching, you know, he came upon the assembly house of the assembly, and he saw the Yadus sitting there, you know, in a kind of semicircle with an empty throne in the center. That was Krishna's throne. They were waiting for Krishna to arrive to conduct the affairs of state, to make the decisions. And as he was approaching, he noticed that the effulgence coming from these personalities was so brilliant that the effulgence decorated or made more beautiful the jewels and ornaments that were on their bodies. And in the purport to that verse, Sanatana Goswami makes a very, very profound statement that is exactly in line with what you just said, to reinforce what you said and document what you said. He said that effulgence, what that effulgence was, was their love for Krishna and their love for one another. So when we do have selfless love for Krishna, automatically the relationships we have with one another become sweet and satisfying, and the combined effulgence of that community results in Krishna consciousness spreading like wildfire. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. All right, it's 8 o'clock, a little after 8, so what should we do?
Are there any more questions? Yes.
Maharaj, you're talking about absorption. So how to understand whether one's absorption in these pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, Srimad Bhagavatam, are not on the level of Sahajiya mentality and neither on the level of impersonalism, you know, just to understand pastime for the sake of knowledge. I mean, just to then quote, you know, the whole pastime perfectly to gain name, fame, something like that. So how to understand that, whether one's absorption is not on these two platforms?
Absorption that is materially motivated will be more difficult to sustain. Nevertheless, let's be factual. However you try to get Lord Chaitanya's mercy, because he is Parama Karuna, extremely merciful, however you try to get his mercy, whatever the motivation, you are extremely fortunate. Now, it's a fact that just like in the song, Lochana Dasta Kori, Parama Karuna, Pahundwijana Nitai Guru Chandra, Sabha Avatar, Sar Shiromani Kevala, Anandakanda, Bhaja Bhaja Bhai Chaitananda Nitai, Sujada Vishvashakore, Vishaya Chadiya, Seva Semajiya, Mukhe Bolo Hariya. It's true that once you taste some absorption, if you want to really penetrate deeper than Vishaya Chadiya, Seva Semajiya, you need to give up sense gratification, give up the inferior motivations. Still, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda's program is first you taste the nectar of absorption, and then they'll negotiate with you. Krishna is much more strict, as you've heard so many times. First surrender, then we talk about the taste. So we don't want to intimidate persons like, what are your motives for going out on book distribution? We want to let them taste the joy of serving Lord Chaitanya. And then you start talking about, well, if you want a deeper level of absorption, you know, this is, you know, you do like this, you do like that. But you don't want to turn, and of course you're almost expert at this here. You don't make distributing Lord Chaitanya's mercy into an obstacle course or some kind of military boot camp, and you make it a joyful expression of the soul. You engage devotees enthusiastically and happily in Lord Chaitanya's service, the anartas will go. And obviously, as they make more advancement, they'll be more aware themselves of these anartas, and they'll help the process of purification consciously. Hear Krishna's pastimes, recite Krishna's pastimes. Even if there is some desire for fame, oh, they'll appreciate me that I can recite this leela. But just to learn the leela in order to recite it, you know, you had to concentrate. It's certainly not the best motivation, but still we can't overlook the transformative power of focusing upon Krishna, absorption in Krishna. In other words, I'm sure you don't want a community where everyone's kind of staring at their navels, like, now what is my, what do I really think? And you want action in Krishna consciousness, and in order to act in Krishna consciousness, you will. Don't worry, Krishna will arrange for your purification. Not to worry about that part. I know it's in some. Sometimes it becomes a little fashionable, not here, but in other places. You know, who are we, and what does it mean to be a Hare Krishna? And what am I anartas? And before I do anything, I've got to get rid of all my anartas. And all that anarta navritti will happen through absorbed action in Krishna consciousness. That dynamic action is like an agitator panel in a washing machine. So it shakes the dirt out of the clothes. Anyway, that's my understanding. Maybe others can give more clarification. Anything to say? Such. All right. Huh? Yes.
You mentioned about this community. Healthy community that has ready access to constant guidance and care, as well as ready opportunity for selfless service. Such a community exists. Is the community as such communicating this to people at large, that is what they are engaged in? The question is, how does it communicate that there exists such a community doing this? Does it do it by setting an example? People come and see that this is what is going on. Or does it proactively communicate this in preaching that we exist here and we do this, 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 that?
That's a question of strategy. There's no doubt example is the most powerful teacher. It's hard for people to understand what is bhakti theoretically, but if they see it in action and associate with those who are practicing it, they'll they'll become attracted. So it's very important that they see living examples. Otherwise, you can go out into the material world and try to do outreach work. We do selfless service. Come see selfless service. People really don't know what it is. A few fortunate persons, you know, they'll click on it. Yeah, that. But most people, selfless service, you know, they'll try to relate it to their mundane experience. But when they come in contact with devotees, then they get a taste. Then they actually can perceive what's going on. So by your community's thunderous activities, there's the thunder and then the downpour of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. People, they see that. These people are different. They're doing something different. They're going to a different place. And they become enthralled. When they see you distributing books door to door or on the streets or in the shopping centers and doing Harinam, they're seeing a different world. It's like in flying here this morning from Santa Barbara, Giriraj Maharaj and I were sitting on a bench outside the airport, and some man approaches, airport worker, and he kind of walks in front of us and walks back and says, "Excuse me, don't mind me asking, what are you people?" And I said, "You know Hare Krishna, you know Hare Krishna?" He said, "Yeah, but I haven't seen you all in 20 years. I said, "Don't worry, we're still around, we're multiplying. So you want to give people a chance to see you all. And seeing is believing. And of course, by your distributing so many books, you're changing so many lives. Is in Melbourne, Australia, where Prabhupada explained that even if people don't buy the book, if they just take it in their hands and appreciate it, it's enough to give them a human form of life in the next birth. So do you know any welfare work more effective than that? That someone just takes a book out, you know, from the smart box or out of your hands and, no thanks. Get a human form of life? We don't know the full extent of full result of these activities we're doing. We think we know so much, you know. We actually don't know the full extent of what we're doing. Just like our parents, they don't know, unless they're devotees, they don't know the full extent of what their children are doing. I know with my mother, she doesn't really understand so much what I'm doing. I told her, in your last breath in this world, you'll understand what your son's been doing. And then later I found out from Giriraj Maharaj that Prabhupada had written him a letter like that, saying the parents of devotees, in their last breath in this world, they'll understand how much great value they're getting because their children are doing devotional service. We ourselves don't know the full value. But as the years go by and dedicate devotional service, we get more and more insight. And it's quite mind-boggling. Remember Lord Chaitanya is bestowing his mercy on Prataparudra Maharaj in three ways: body, mind, and words. But if you just get a drop of that, what is Kaviraj Goswami says, just a drop of love of Krishna. A drop of the ocean is enough to drown all the three worlds. So yes, I myself am definitely into the establishment of communities, particularly urban communities. I don't think you all are ready to go live on farms yet. But that doesn't mean it can't be a community. So what I see here is an extraordinary miracle of a vibrant urban community focused on selfless service to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. And the members of the community feel valued. They have a sense of mission. They're advancing. Mm-hmm. They're dynamic, one goal after another goal. So that's most encouraging to see. People are so lonely these days, more lonely than ever before, in spite of all the internet, smartphones, social networking sites. They're more lonely than ever before. I saw an advertisement. It was kind of like a tongue-in-cheek advertisement for wealthy housing development in California. Yeah, obviously there's some people who still have money and they're buying houses. So the advertisement pointed out the benefits of this big house. It had 5 internet alcoves. One for each member of the family, so each member of the family could absorb himself or herself on the internet and not deal with any other members of the family. 5 separate internet alcoves. And then 2 offices, an office for the wife, an office for the husband, on completely opposite sides of the big house, so they wouldn't have to see each other during the day. And then the headlines of this advertisement said, "This is the perfect house for today's dysfunctional family." The people are so lonely. Desperately trying for relationships. They're getting burned out by the internet. The latest, you know what the latest social statistics are for social networking sites for men? This year, for the first time that this survey has been taken since all these social networking sites have started, the number of men who say that social networking sites are very important for establishing and maintaining relationships is dropped 50% this year. The ladies are still going strong, but the ladies are known as late adopters and men are known as early adopters of technology. So men are down 50%. The survey takers say it shows that internet fatigue has set in terms of internet as a means of having relationships. Down 50%. They don't consider anymore that this is such an important way for establishing and maintaining relationships. People are more lonely than ever before. And what's happening in California now? What happened to the California dream? For the first time, at least maybe San Jose is different, but in L.A., San Diego, they're saying waves of anxiety are hitting. For the first time, the dream is shattered. So people will be looking for such communities to take shelter of. California, you know, the land of, you know, hey, I'm good, don't worry, I'm good. It's all good. The dream has shattered. It's economically in bad shape. In Los Angeles and San Diego, most devotees living in California, even people, not simply devotees, but guests, they didn't know that California is considered alternatively the number 7 or number 8 biggest economy in the world, more than Russia. They didn't know that. How many of you knew that? Yeah, very, see? And it's on the rocks. You all know that, right? Huge deficit. Cutting back essential services and California, and then followed by Illinois and New York. The three biggest cities in North America, other than Mexico. And do things look like they're improving? Oh, everyone's hoping. Then there's the fear in the back of their mind. Double dip recession. Oh. They're looking for any signs of hope. Was it the past couple of days? Wall Street is hiring again. Oh, that must be a good sign. It's desperate. There must be some hope somewhere. So then you have your community, which is showing real wealth, the bhakti wealth. You see, a truly intelligent person can come to bhakti in any situation. But don't think that everyone is so intelligent. Most people need a little kick in the rear, you know, due to hard times, and then their brain starts to work a bit, you know. Krishna knows that. Here's one very interesting thing. Back in the mid-70s, when all those books were distributed, I didn't know it. Maybe Vaisheshekapu and Keshava Bharati Maharaj knew it. But I just, you know, I wasn't reading newspapers or paying attention to anything back then. But decades later, I found out that was a big economic crunch time in the USA. Did you know that? Yeah, around 73, 74, it was a huge economic crisis. Because oil prices were, and oil shortages.
Gas lines.
The Vietnam War had ended. The Vietnam War just ended, and so there was so much inflation, and it was economic tough times, but the book distributors never knew it. So I see you all are rightly positioned to capture market share. Prabhupada said a real business person knows how to make a profit whether the price is going up or down. An amateur, a neophyte business person can only make a profit when the price is going up. But a real business person, any situation, makes a profit. Recession, depression, or economic explosion, expansion, whatever. Bhakti is all attractive. So please understand how lonely people are these days. Don't be fooled by all the technology of artificial togetherness. They're more lonely than ever before. And they're looking for meaningful relationships and a meaningful goal in life. And what is more meaningful than service to Krishna? What is a better goal than service to Krishna? So I can see you're laying the foundation now. This is organic development. You're laying the foundation. And then the great leap forward will come. For real. The communists used to always talk about the great leap forward that would never come. But you're actually laying the foundation for a great leap forward. Organic development. Getting all the foundation securely in place. Rather than artificial development. So it's very enlivening to see. So please take advantage of these circumstances in which you can easily become a hero in Lord Chaitanya's eyes. Don't waste the opportunity. Be even more greedy for such opportunities. And yes, you can picket Vaisheshika Prabhu's house, you know, the picket signs, march, more service, more opportunity. You're not giving enough. Give more. We're ready for more. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.